Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Well, and that's why I think it's important to examine the possibilities and the reasons why this has not been solved. And I think one thing that we can get into, Captain, and part of it that we talked about last week was I kept referencing maybe the investigators have just been unlucky. Maybe, you know, because you see this and you're like, we got the video. We got the voice. We have eyewitness statements.
They worked with FBI,
and again, they might have DNA. And I'm gonna quit saying might. I'm gonna go with they do. Okay, I think that probably very quickly into this thing, they realized that they had DNA, and they thought this thing was going to be over and done very quickly. And then it took a while, and they realized this dude's not in any of the systems. We can't track this guy down. That we have nothing to compare it to. And I think that's why you see there was a delay in putting, taking that still image and then releasing the actual short little video there. Mm-hmm. And then there's the delay between that short, that still image and the sketch, the original sketch that comes out. Because what, that didn't come out till what, June or July of the year of the crime? Mm-hmm. There were several months that went by. So here's one thing where I wonder, let's get into a bunch of things where investigators may have just been unlucky. One, the no match of DNA. We've already talked about that. Mm-hmm. Two, I'm starting to think that the bridge guy's appearance on the pixelated video may almost give a false sense of his actual true appearance. And I think that that's working in his favor and working against investigators. For one thing, when you first see the video, right? When you saw the still image, didn't you think we were looking for like a pudgy guy, like kind of a fluffy fat guy, or at least slightly overweight? But then later when they released the video and you see the individual walking, you can see that those pants are, the jeans are a lot baggier than what his actual legs may require.
Right.
When you see that leg move, you almost see that the legs are much thinner than those jeans.
Chicken legs.
And then you have to wonder how many layers of clothing is that. That's the thing that I wonder why, if for some reason he did stand out, and he must have in some form or fashion, because we have witnesses or believed witnesses that think that they saw him on one of the trails. I don't know that the detecting factor for them would be that, oh, I saw a guy with wet jeans. Because we went through that conversation last week, you may not have been able to visually see and determine that his jeans were wet.
Right.
They may have just appeared to be a darker shade of blue, but it was a warm day for February. To me, the guy looks, at least on the, you know, the upper half of him, looks to be very overdressed for the temperature that day. It almost appears that he's wearing a hoodie or something of significance underneath a jacket. And one thing going in his favor too, here again, I believe that there's a collar to that jacket. There's a part of that jacket that's sticking up at one point, and he's looking down to watch his feet, his foot placement on that bridge. That's concealing his face a little bit. He may be wearing a hat, or that might just be wearing a hoodie with the hood up. That I feel like we're getting a false sense of his true appearance because it is a pixelated video. Now, here's the thing. You were talking about, do we have more video footage? I think that there's more video, and this is pure speculation, okay? Pure speculation. Don't put on the blog, untrue. I'm saying it, this might not be true. I'm just guessing here. I think that they have more video footage. Unfortunately, I don't think that there's so much video to watch. What I mean by that is I think that shortly after Libby was filming this guy on mm-hmm. the bridge, and he's very quickly making his way. We're not seeing that clip in real speed. I don't care what anybody says. We cannot believe we're seeing that at real speed.
Mm-hmm.
I think at some point she had to conceal her phone from him. Either hold it in a way that she's not filming or it's not obvious to him that he's being caught on camera, or she stuck it in her pocket. And that might be the reason why we're hearing the words and it sounds muffled. Guys down the hill. It may sound muffled because it might be in her pocket.
Right.
And I think that the video was running and filming. It just might not have had anything additional to film because it was concealed in her pocket. Mm-hmm. And I think that her phone went dead so quickly. Anybody that's run the camera feature, camera feature and or the video feature,
mm-hmm.
the video recording feature on their phone, realize that kills your phone very quickly.
Yeah.
And they were saying very quickly her calls were going straight to voicemail. They weren't ringing anymore. And I think that this guy very likely did not know that he was filmed, did not know that his voice was caught on her
right,
on mean, her phone, and he left the phone there because, look, I don't want to give this asshole any credit, but he's smart enough. He's smart enough that he's got away with this so far.
Well, and, let's not say smart, because that's one of the things.
Or lucky enough.
Well, I think I got a better word for you. One of the things that they were kind of talking about in profiling this individual is he organized or disorganized. And so I think there's a lot of evidence that shows that he's organized. But then not taking the phone, that seems like disorganization.
Well, you could take that either way. I was thinking about that too. Not taking the phone, you go, oh, that's disorganized. He didn't plan it out, didn't put much thought into it. What if he did put thought into it in advance and he said, I'm not taking any of their phones because what if they trace their phones? They can trace, you know, what if they follow the pings on their phones to me because I took them with me? What if he destroyed her phone at the scene, not knowing that it captured any of his image or anything like that because the right. phone's dead by that point? Or if he just left it there or tossed it in the water?
Yeah.
Tossed in the water is an interesting thing too, because we talked about the clothing, right? The victim's clothing last week. We were talking about where they found clothed, where they found not in clothed. The nude,
yeah, right.
where they found, was the clothing in fact ever even found if it wasn't on their person? I still don't know the answer to that, but uh-huh. I did find some info that was saying that, clothing may have been found in the creek, and this would be the point of Deer Creek that would be nearest where their bodies were found.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's, but again, it's a very vague, broad statement of clothing found in creek. We don't know if it belonged to the victims. We don't know if in fact that there was clothing found in the creek, but what I can say this is when they were searching for the girls, there were helicopters that were flying overhead, and they were filming some of the search that was going on for the girls. They'd not found the bodies yet. You can clearly see three or four searchers, and the reason why you can see them is because they're wearing those red, like, suits, head-to-toe suits. They're wearing these red suits, and they're in the water, and there's something there with them. They're examining something that they found there. Again, that could have been the victim's clothing, could have been an item discarded by the killer that belonged to him. It could have been
yeah,
Libby's
it could have,
phone.
It could have been a weapon.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Something was found in that water. We just don't know what the significance is.
One of the rumors I kept hearing this week was that they were actually found, but they were wearing each other's clothes. So whatever they were wearing before, it switched. And again, this is, you know, just one of those random rumors. And then it becomes, well, weren't they both wearing jeans? Is it possible that the shirts were just changed? Who knows? But yeah, I mean, there's, again, there's...
We talked about that a bit. And to me, that would almost imply that the killer redressed them.
Right.
Or dress them. It doesn't have to mean that. But that's where your mind goes.
They're size-wise, they're different size girls. But I could see a situation where, you know, the pants were put back on correctly, but maybe the shirts weren't. So,
well, yeah, Abby had a weird rumor that zip-up sweatshirt.
Yeah.
So it is. It's a weird rumor. It's one of those things that when you first read that or see that, it kind of, you're like, whoa,
yeah,
whoa, what is this? And then I really start thinking about it. I'm like, well, we have a very short window of time, and there's a chance that a lot of things might have had to take place during that short window of time. I don't know that we have the time to redress the victim and get that wrong afterward.
Yeah, I don't know. And again, the source that I have gone back to, I brought this up, and again, it was something that they just didn't want to comment on. But normally that, like I said, there's been several times where I've said, oh, you know, I've asked questions, they don't want to comment on it, and that normally meant it was correct. So, but I guess I shouldn't assume that.
Well, and for anybody out there wondering where we're coming up with this info, because, you know, I'm sure somebody's going, well, they've not released even the cause of death for either girl. They've not released very many things true to the crime scene.
Right.
So what is this stuff you're even talking about? Well, the way that this works, from my understanding, is that keep in mind, there were search parties out there looking for these little girls. Some of these rumors are believed to have stemmed from people that were actually involved in the search.
Yeah.
And may have found the girls, or may have been in. There was a team across the creek at the same time that the team on the other side found the girls. So we have this whole thing where we have multiple people that were in that area may have seen something that's not been released to the public and may have spoke and told somebody else of what they saw, what they witnessed during those searches.
Or again,
we have just made up stuff,
right? But
from people elsewhere that are claiming to have heard something.
Yeah, but it's also such a small town.
3,000, 3,500 people, yeah, something like that.
And it's just like we've talked a little bit about it, but like the Pike County murders happened in an area where I used to work, but, you know, a long time ago. I'd work one day a week in that town, and just knowing some people from that town, the rumors that I heard were not things that you would hear. I mean, it would have made a fascinating probably 10-part episodes on the rumors that I heard.
Oh, you heard like hours of like rumors. We're talking detailed
names,
theories.
Yeah.
With people's names and motives and why they did this and why they did that. What's still going on today that's in relation to this specific theory. And you heard multiple theories that some of them would have taken 3 hours to explain. Yeah. And then when the news broke that they solved it,
it was none of them.
It was none of those theories.
It was, yeah. And I'll try to make the long story short. Basically, there was tons of these rumors based off of this guy that I worked for. And there was all these weird rumors surrounding him, and I worked for him for a long time. So I ended up calling him after I heard all these rumors and asked him what he thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
Because this guy... I was very close to the family. Every member of that family, adult-wise, actually worked for him at some point, you know, as like a freelance contractor or whatever. And he simply said to me that he thought that the involvement, this was all based around the custody of that girl. And when he said that, and this guy is a guy that he likes to exaggerate everything. So you would think that he would want to tell these crazy tall tales. He said, no, I simply think it was a dispute based off of custody. Mm-hmm. And then once they arrested the family up in Alaska, that's pretty much what it all, you know, the Pike County murders was all about, was that custody issue. So it's strange. I heard a million rumors, and they were fascinating, and they were great tall tales. And that's what I'm afraid that is going to start happening here.
Well, I mean, in a sense, it has a little bit, where you have all these people that are now considered suspects by the public and then never publicly cleared by law enforcement. I'm guessing they've checked these people and probably not too interested in a lot of them. But you, not only did you have that with the arrest of certain individuals, you also had that with the search warrants that were being filed and executed very quickly after this case broke.
Right.
Right. So the first one that hit the news was a home, a property on Bicycle Bridge Road was searched on February 16th, 3 days after they went missing, 2 days after they were found. Mm-hmm. This location is approximately 5 miles from the Monon High Bridge, a 9-minute drive from the area. This was searched, and I don't know what their outcome was. I mean, obviously no arrests were made in this search. But then you have another search that took place in a town called Peru, Indiana. This one took place on February 25th. This is a good amount away. This is 37 miles away, a 56-minute drive from the bridge. The third search took place in Lebanon, which I think one of the suspects, or one of the suspect's friends that we were talking about last week, Garrett Kurtz.
Yeah.
Was from Lebanon, which is not, so this says, my notes say 54 miles is the fastest route. And so this would be an hour and 6 minute drive from the bridge. I do want to point out, with the Lebanon search, the papers were saying that they were uncertain of the exact date that the search warrant was executed, uncertain of the exact address known. Which makes me wonder if it is in fact connected to the Delphi murders, or if it was just a search that was executed and people's, you know, minds.
Right. Right.
We're filling in the blanks, and that's what they came up with. But obviously one that was connected was the fourth search, and probably the most public of all four searches, was in Delphi, Ronald Logan's property. But they didn't execute that search warrant until March 17th. Now, we all know that Logan eventually gets arrested for illegally operating his vehicle. But, I mean, this is a guy, if he's not connected, which I don't think he looks like Bridge Guy. I don't think his physical description looks like Bridge Guy. I don't think his facial or hair looks anything like what I'm seeing on that little bit of footage on Libby's phone. So if this guy is not connected, he's been looked at very thoroughly. He's been arrested on other charges. We have to believe that if in fact they are, well, he would have been arrested before you would be required to give the DNA, I guess. I'm assuming now that he's in prison that they have that. We know that his property's been searched. But one thing I didn't get to real well with the footage on Libby's phone, I think that you probably have a lot of audio. And I want to get into the audio here in just a second. But the reason why I think that we only have a very short period of actual video that we can watch and view, mm-hmm. as opposed to video of the inside of her shirt pocket or pants pocket, is, look, the video that they released is not great. Remember, I said maybe the bridge guy got lucky that his true appearance is not well depicted in that short camera footage.
Right.
And maybe investigators just got unlucky with that. And even though Libby did her best to try to out this guy, maybe we're only seeing that short clip because that might be close to what all that they have. You have to believe that they would show us one of the better versions of him, right?
Right, because they could pull the audio out and just show us the image.
And here's what I also wonder too, Captain. We're going back to the audio. You might have that. That might be a part of the tricky part of not answering these questions for the public. When they go, oh, you got to have more video, right? Well, we can't confirm that or deny it. They're not lying. They may have more video. It's just 39 minutes of 40 minutes of video is unwatchable.
Right. It's blacked out.
Yeah. And then on top of that, so for the audio, then people go, well, do you have more audio? Well, they might, but here's my opinion too. If Bridge guy had a gun, if he had a firearm, there might be a decent amount of talking at the very early parts of that abduction. And the closer they get to the murder part of the abduction, the less talking is going to go on, at least from the perpetrator. In my mind, he's going to direct them as he goes. And unless they are, you know, trying to talk him out of whatever he's going to do, there might not be a ton of audio from him. Now, I do find some of the stuff regarding cell phones to be very, very interesting in this case.
Mm-hmm.
So what we were able to determine and find was actual footage of Mike Patty. He's the grandfather of Libby. He's talking the night that they are missing. He's being interviewed for the news the night that they are missing.
Yeah.
And he's talking about they have already checked her Snapchat and her social media. So as terrifying as that is to think about, we do know that by that point, before midnight that night, his family, the German family, had seen the Snapchat photo taken from 2:07 p.m. of Abby on the bridge.
Right. They were probably following her on Snapchat, like they were connected.
Yeah. Yeah. And so during that same interview is when he says that her phone had pinged around town a couple of times. He does go on to say, let me see here, his exact words. I don't know exactly what time that interview was taking place, because I don't think that it was live. I think it was filmed and then played. But in the interview, he's saying that the phone went dead, stopped pinging about 4 or 5 hours ago.
Okay.
And that broadcast that I'm talking about, it came out before midnight that night. So this is where everybody got all worked up and got all concerned about the Mike Patty's words. A couple of things. Some people came out and said, oh, the family had Libby's phone. No, that's not what he says. Listen to his words. He says, we were checking her social media accounts. We were checking things that we could check without having her phone.
My thought is because of her age, they either had her passwords and her login information.
Or they followed her, right?
Right. So they could then just see what she posted. But I think it's more in depth. I think they probably had her login information or her passwords. But I also think maybe if they didn't know, that the sister knew. And then that way they could just check that stuff. You know, how are they going to have her phone the night that they go missing when they haven't even been found yet?
Right. Right. But that's the thing, though. People mishear things. And rather than double checking it,
sometimes people are stupid.
Right. They just roll with it. They just run with it. And they're like, oh, he said they have her phone. And then they're like, well, that's weird. Why would they, then they're starting to think that the family's involved. The family's not involved. Okay. The family didn't kill these girls.
Well, the direct family that we know of. Right?
Yeah. But again, then
there's not a lot of suspicious on the outside members. I'm just saying.
But even take that a step further, then they're not covering for anybody either.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's no realistic reason to believe anybody would cover for anybody if if you have those ties to the victims. It just doesn't make any sense.
No.
So they didn't have her phone. We know that. It's just something that people misread, people misunderstood, and then created that rumor. And then on top of that, with it pinging, with her phone pinging in more than one location through town, it wasn't, the phone wasn't traveling around that night. It wasn't going anywhere. And as Kelsey later explains in her YouTube video, the town is so small that in certain areas, if you walk from one side of your property to the other side of your property, your phone will ping off of two different towers, because that's just the, if you look at the cell phone tower information in that area, it makes sense.
Well,
it
right,
totally but, makes sense.
Right. And I think this is not information that she just knew. I think this is information that they probably got from FBI or,
right,
or some kind of law enforcement.
Now, the other thing with that, though, too, then some people go, well, the German family, they seem to be going into panic mode very quickly. It was only a very short period of time that, you know, we talked about the timeline the other day. It's the longest that you can stretch it out is less than 2 hours from drop off time to the time where you're almost in full search mode. You're a little over 2 hours. You're now alerting other family members. New family members are showing up to the scene looking for the little girls. And then by 5:30, so at the very earliest that they got dropped off, 1:30, 1:35, 1:40, somewhere in that time range, and then reported missing to the police by 5:30 that night. Some people suggesting that they're sounding the alarm very quickly. But I think the problem with that is it's a little girl, and I don't think people are putting enough thought into it. So, you know, when you and I did the exercise last week, where we were playing this scenario out loud, talking through it. We're going, okay, well, what would happen in this situation? Okay, so Derek, the father, goes to pick them up. It was arranged that they would be picked up around the time that Derek arrived. And then on top of that, he tried calling her at least twice. Nobody answered the phone. He walks around looking for them on the trails, does not find them, and then notifies Becky. Becky's the grandmother who gave permission to Libby to go to that area that day, provided that she had someone to drop them off and someone to pick them up, and that the drop off and pickup were pre-arranged. That was part of the rules. So as soon as he notifies Becky, it's a very quick call from Becky to Kelsey to go, did you in fact drop the girls off? Are you still with the girls?
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear from Kelsey, yes, they were dropped off. I'm at my boyfriend's house. I'm getting ready to go to work. It's not crazy to believe how much longer after that do they see the Snapchat photo of video proof evidence, picture evidence of Abby on the bridge. And then you're there looking for them and you're going, oh my God, they were here. Nobody's seen them. What the hell's going on? And mind you, it's February.
Well,
it's going to get dark between 5:30 and 6 o'clock that night.
Mm-hmm. Go on. I also think sometimes you just have a gut feeling.
Right.
That gut feeling is telling you something bad happened. Or is the picture of Bridge Guy also in the Snapchat feed? So you see some pictures of them at the park. You see them going over the bridge. And then the next picture you see is just of a man. That would be alarming for any father.
Terrifying.
Or any parental figure.
Well, and not only that, even if they didn't see him on any of the of her social media stuff, mm-hmm, which I don't think that they did, but again, we can't say 100%. Mike Patty arrives on the scene around 5 o'clock. We know that once he gets there, he goes to the Mears property, and while on the Mears property, he's calling a friend of his who is a police officer. We don't know what that conversation is, but you don't have to have much bigger of a brain than I got to figure out what they probably talked about. It's probably a friend calling in, asking for advice, going, look, man, I'm over here by Monon High Bridge over at the park area. Been looking for my granddaughter. We can't find her. We only dropped her off about 1:30 to 1:45, so it's not been that long. What should I do? Should I report her missing? Should I just sit tight? What do I do? And that's just, he probably got some good friend advice who's saying, you know what? You got nothing to lose by reporting her missing.
Right.
Hopefully you report her missing and you find her 15 minutes later and we can call the whole thing off.
Yeah.
But it was deal. Right. It was going to get dark though. And it was February. And yeah, so I don't think that
she's
they
not answering her phone. I mean, we live in an age that we're all connected. And so you can text somebody, they'll text you back within minutes, or you can call their
phone.
She's
not responding to anything. And I know, right. I went on this long rant, Captain, but you said the most important thing out of that whole deal there. It's a little girl. It's a child.
Mm-hmm.
It's a child. So
it's your baby. I mean, and it doesn't matter. Look, it could be a 20-year-old that went missing. When it's your baby, it doesn't matter that they're 20 or 30 or 40 years old or whatever they are, right? It's mm-hmm. still your baby.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Now, I did see some reports regarding cell phones, okay? So, and I'm not talking about Libby or Abby's cell phone. I'm talking about cell phones of persons who were in the area around the Monon High Bridge that day, within that short window of time of when they went missing. Maybe even back it up a few hours beforehand, maybe even back it up an hour and a half or so afterwards. Mm-hmm. Remember, they were interested in the car that could have been there as long as from noon to 5. So the report that I saw about this, I found it to be incredibly interesting because it kind of can take you down two different roads here, right? So the statement that I saw was that they being law enforcement have reviewed everybody's phones that were pinging in that general area. They've spoke to all of those individuals. So that can take you two ways with your thinking on who is Bridge Guy. Did he not bring a phone with him?
Right.
Or I guess have it turned off.
Yeah.
Did he not bring a phone with him to that area that day?
Yeah.
Or the interesting other thought about that is, remember the statement from the last press conference on April 22nd. Where they very clearly say, we may have spoken to you already, Bridge Guy. When they're talking to Bridge Guy, they say, we may have already talked to you.
Yeah.
And then you go, so that works both ways. That statement's probably very true. They've spoke to everybody's cell phone who was pinging in that area that day. And it's either one of two things. Either this guy didn't bring his phone with him, or they've already interviewed him.
Yeah, so two things. One, if the individual turned their phone off before they got into the area, that is a well-organized person. Would make me feel like it would be difficult for them to get caught. Also, discipline. I would think that even if this is the first attack or the first murders by this individual, that they're disciplined enough to wait out for the right opportunity. But back to what you're saying about the press conference, when he says they might be in this room, I think that's like the scariest line of the whole part. You know, we might have talked to you. You might be in this room right now. And that I think that's the, that every time I watch that, press conference, it gives you chills and just like the weird actions. I don't want to say weird, but like there's a nervousness in his presentation where you kind of wonder, does he see somebody that's making him that way? It's a very strange press conference.
You and I talked about that within hours or even a couple days of that press conference. Yeah. And one thing you were pointing out, you're like, well, when he said this person might even be in the room, is there somebody in the room that he means specifically, that he saw somebody in the room that he does not like for any number of reasons, whether they're not being cooperative in the investigation or there's some other form of dirtbag or whatever? Is he just upset with that person's presence, or do we have a situation where they've really done their homework on this and said, you know what, we've talked about the strategy of the super cop. We've talked about the strategy of publicly calling the killer a coward and calling him a loser and all other different kinds of things you can call him. There's a strategy in that. Is there anything where he's going, you know what, I have to play a specific role during this speech, during this press conference, and could that have been too much for him? Maybe. Could it have put him on edge a little bit? Maybe. I thought he did a hell of a job. I don't know exactly what he was supposed to be portraying there, but I think I think the words of that were not only planned out, I think where they appeared in order was extremely timed out, planned out as well. I think his demeanor was somewhat decided upon in advance. That, you know, don't be afraid to lean into the podium, to look aggressive.
Right.
Don't be afraid to appear to get angry at certain points during your statement. Don't be afraid to throw out a sentence and leave a long pause between to the next one. Don't be afraid to be theatrical with some of it. I think there was a lot going on there. It's I want to give him a lot of kudos there, because it's a lot for one person to do. Yeah, there were other law enforcement there present that day, obviously. A lot of them just standing in the background, and this guy had to do it all by himself with the whole presentation there. And I thought he did a fantastic job. But it also goes back to what you were talking about earlier. The motives, the method of operation, how organized could this killer be? Personally, I think he's probably extremely organized, to the point where I think he planned out where he parked his vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I think he put thought into not only stepping foot onto the crime scene, but also fleeing the crime scene. And the placement of his vehicle was thought out as such that it has to bode well for both of those scenarios. Then on top of that, I think the reason for the baggy clothing on top and the multiple layers on top is he brought everything with him that day to kill somebody. He brought everything that he thought he was going to need in that scenario to kill somebody. And it's all concealed under those layers. And that might be another reason why he may appear to be chubbier or more heavy set than what he actually is. And again, we might just be getting a bad look at this guy. And again, I think they're giving us the best look that they got from her footage. Now there is one interesting part in there. If you really slow that small clip down, there's a part where it looks like somebody may have blocked something out from that picture that may for just a split second that we saw something that the public is not supposed to see. I don't know if it would have been a weapon or something else. It would have to be something significant. It wouldn't be something, there's no reason for them to disguise this individual anyway. So they're not trying to stop us from seeing him, from seeing Bridge Guy. But I think that they're concealing something there. That might be the gun as he approached the girls.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I want to address here real quick is a couple things. John Douglas, you know, my hero. You're my hero, John Douglas. You're my hero.
I still think we should the Wayne's World. We're not worthy. Yeah. We're not worthy. We're scum.
I saw a short interview with him after the 422 press conference. And look, It was one of those interviews. You ever see like an interview where the, you know, John's just standing there. It was supposed to be just a casual, real quick interview.
Mm-hmm.
But you ever see one where they have the interview. They've clearly brought it back to the news station. They've cut it up the way that they want to cut it up. But instead of just letting you view the entire interview, you're getting the news anchor that just talks the whole time. And they'll show a very quick little answer of his. I would have loved to have heard everything he had to say about his thoughts on who Bridge Guy is and what's going on with the investigation. But the one thing he did say, which was fascinating, but it's also not like it's not like the most brilliant thought that nobody else would have thought of. But when he heard the audio of guys down the hill, he was saying that the casualness of choosing the word guys, he said it almost felt to him like it was somebody that was used to talking to people of that age.
Yeah.
Addressing a group of people in that age. And he almost felt like it was like something he would expect to hear a teacher say. Yes. You know, guys, come on.
School bus driver.
Yeah. Guys, cut it out.
Right.
Guys, all right, it's time to come inside. You know, something like that. I found that interesting, one for multiple reasons, but one, just the simple fact of who would have been available at that same time. Bridge Guy, that's the thing. In their profile, when they're talking about identifying who the suspect could be, who Bridge Guy could be, this is somebody that was unaccounted for a certain period of time on February 13th, 2017. This is somebody who may have made up an excuse why they were accounted for during that time. Here's the other problem, though. This is where law enforcement may have just got unlucky. This also may be a guy that did not need to be accounted for that day for any number of reasons. Maybe he doesn't have anybody to answer to. Maybe he has nobody
lives
to
alone.
He lives alone, works for himself, was unemployed. You know, there's a bunch of reasons why he wouldn't have anybody to answer to. Yeah.
In a garage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With his friend.
With his
who
podcast.
Can't remember what day it is.
Yeah.
but no, these are all reasons why law enforcement might just be simply unlucky at this moment, and Bridge Guy is getting lucky.
I hate Bridge Guy.
His luck will run out. But the reason why I point this out is there's starting to be, as soon as that second sketch came out, there's starting to be a lot of people that have concern now with the investigation and with the state of the investigation.
Well, it seems like incompetence.
Right. Right. And look, I don't know what to make of the two sketches. I'm just pointing out that it's possible that what some people may be thinking is them being incompetent might just be bad luck at the moment. Might just be bad luck at the moment. The other thing, too, that I want to point out with being organized or disorganized, again, I think whatever he thought he was going to need to carry out this crime, he brought with him that day. He brought with it, that was on his person. Now, that tells you several things about the makeup of this individual. He may have very likely have gone there with the intention of killing that day. We don't know what else he did to the victims, but we also can't expect that he went in there planning that he was going to kill two victims that day. That might not have been part of his plan. It might just have been, like we stated earlier, that he was looking for someone to put themselves in a compromised position at the other side of that bridge. And if he was looking for a female, he does not have to be a pedophile or a registered sex offender to have committed these murders. He may have just been looking for a female, may have even gone there hoping to see an adult female jogger by themselves and attack them, but did not find his victim, did not find whoever fit his victimology. And he saw these two girls who I think his victimology is more so of whoever would be compromised, would be alone and would be give him the better percentage of getting away with this rather than having a specific victim in mind. Does that make sense, or did I get too weird with it?
I think it makes sense. So basically, you're saying that he's going to go there. He's going to find an opportunity. As long as they fit a certain criteria, that's good enough.
Yeah, because I've had many good conversations with several people over great beers on this case, because this case is so captivating right now. It's on everybody's minds. And some of the people have said, well, not only do we have the video and the audio, but we know that we're looking for a killer. We know that we're looking for a pedophile. I don't think that we know that. I don't think we know that last part.
I don't even think if we know the first part. I think, to be on these trails, and let's go down this road just for a second. To go on those trails, you might just be an individual that carries a gun with you. To go on these trails to be an outdoors person, you might just carry a knife with you. Is it possible? I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. After 2 years, with all the information that we have video footage, we have audio footage, we have these sketches, we have eyewitnesses, we have a lot of things going on there. Is it possible that this individual, this was their first time, and this has been their only time so far, because how scared they are now that they're going to get caught?
Well, certainly possible.
I don't want to play the possibility game, because
everything's possible. You get into trouble. I like to look at what we think we know, what we do know first, what we think we know, or what we can surmise by putting other facts together.
But I was trying to put out the evidence. I mean, to me, it means something that we're this far along. We have this many people talking about it, and sometimes it feels as if we have nothing. I'm saying it's not out of the realm of possibility that somebody's on the trail that day with certain items. But I don't know.
I think this guy had a kill kit with him. I think it was concealed underneath those layers of clothing. And I don't think it's the first time that he threw that kill kit in his vehicle or put it on his person and went walking around. I agree with your statement that he very likely may have never killed anybody before and may not have afterward. Mm. John Douglas says you don't just wake up one day and go out and kill two kids. So I think what's probably correct is somewhere between your statement and John Douglas's statement.
I'm going to go with my statement.
And here's the thing.
What's his credentials?
If this guy is, if Bridge Guy was 18 or 19 at the time, remember we have...
Mm-hmm.
We have from 18 to 40 years old. If he was 18 or 19 at the time, I'm going to go with you, Captain, that it's very likely that he's never committed a murder before. If he's closer to 39 or 40 at the time, I feel like he's either committed a murder before or has attempted to, or attacked somebody in some fashion where... Maybe he was out scaring the hell out of people one day, and it doesn't have to take place in Delphi. It could take place elsewhere. It's just one of those things. It seems very strange to me that for what I believe he would have need to have brought with him to the bridge that day, quite a bit of stuff to bring with you to the point where I have to call it a murder kit. I have to call it that. So...
I necessarily don't think he had to bring a lot. I mean, if you had a gun, you can control them. But based off their age, maybe you can control them just with a knife. Maybe all you have to do is have one individual, and then the other one's just going to do what you say because you have the individual under lock. So you could control both victims with a knife. That's a possibility. Riskier, but... as far as what we know, we don't know what the person's... It's not like they, the murders happen where they happen because they had to happen that place. Or that the guy got spooked. We don't know any of that information. I mean, it's very likely that that's the case. Where was he heading with these individuals? Maybe it was just across the river. Maybe it wasn't. These are questions we don't have answers for.
Yeah, and I don't want to go too far down the road that we're currently on because, look, we know that he abducted them at some point. We know that they were killed, and we know that he fled that area. I don't want to spend too much time on what could have happened, what could have been going on from the time he abducted him to the time he left.
Right.
I have a lot of thoughts on that and feelings on that and suspicions, but I don't, it's not something that I'm very comfortable in this area discussing. It does us not a whole lot of good because it's stuff we just don't know.
Right.
We just don't know. But I will say this. I believe that this individual, that bridge guy, went to that area that day prepared to kill and knowing that he very likely might kill somebody there that day. I don't think that the girls were targeted in a sense that he met them there or that he followed them from anywhere or that he knew either of them beforehand. I think he was there scoping and looking for a victim. Just like a hunter would sit there looking, waiting for a prey. He was there that day, prepared to do what he came to do. And if something presented itself, he was going to make a move. So I think he can be considered organized in the sense that he seems to be, one, prepared to do whatever it was that he was motivated to do.
Uh-huh.
He was organized enough that we don't have a vehicle description.
Uh-huh.
You can argue the cell phone thing either way. Maybe he was smart enough to know, hey, I don't want to risk bringing these things with me.
Right.
Or is there a chance he thought he heard something or he got spooked and intended to take the cell phones with him, but got spooked and ran out of there faster than he wanted to. And then he gets back to his car, gets home or wherever. And a half hour later, he's going, I forgot the cell phones. So I think you could argue that either way, or he was smart enough to know that he didn't want that thing with him. It also appears that he very likely may not have been carrying his phone with him at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is a very interesting case in the sense that it's one that you feel like you should have so much information and you really just don't. And when you really put the timeline together and you start looking at a map of this area, I encourage everybody to do that. Because if anybody's sitting there and they're confused about the case, that should end it right there. The timeline and a general map of the area will provide you with a lot of ways to... It's going to help you kind of see how this thing probably played out and how very quickly everything moved along that day. It's also 100% horrifying and terrifying to think that, look, this was not a dangerous area. This was not like a place that you wouldn't allow your young teenage girls to go to. This was somebody that, and I think that's why he chose this area. I think he chose it for a couple reasons. One, I think he thought he would very likely find somebody by themselves. Not only would they be by themselves, but this is an area that it's not like you're not seeing a lot of what's going on. You're not near a whole bunch of houses where you might hear what's going on. And then on top of that, he picks a time of day when it's likely to have fewer people there than most. He may or may not have known that there was going to be school that day or not be school that day. So here we are now, Captain, over 2 years later. You and I, there's nothing more that I know about the case that you don't know. There might be some things you kind of just let me go this last 20 minutes. I'm wondering if there's things about the case you know that I don't know.
Well, there's a possible another suspect that is kind of on the undersurface. Another guy with a bulbous nose. I believe he was a firefighter, and he, I guess at some point, was to be connected with the searches for the girls, and he was arrested for, I think, whipped out his cock.
Indecent exposure?
Yeah.
How recent is this arrest?
I haven't looked much into it.
He's
Lafayette.
Okay, so he's clearly under the radar as far as the mass population goes, right? Because all these other people, their names have been put out there, put out there. So he's under the radar as far as mass population goes. But is this,
I know his name, but I'm not putting it out.
Right. Is this a more recent arrest? Is he just very recently an under the radar suspect, or has he been an under the radar suspect for quite some time?
I think he's been under the radar for quite some time.
That this indecent exposure may have happened shortly after the.
Yeah.
May have happened as early as 2017.
But that's what I find interesting about this individual is. One, I could see him being bridge guy. I could see that. Also, if it's true about the reddish hair, reddish brown hair, matches that description. Also has the bulbous nose. It would be a possibility. Not too young and not too old. Of an individual, but I'll show you his picture when we're done here.
I know it's muffled, but when you hear that voice, do you put an age or a ballpark age on that voice?
No.
And I feel like, to me, I feel like both the image that I'm seeing and the voice that I'm hearing sounds to me to be less of a window than 18 to 40. I feel like I'm talking about somebody more like 29 to 40, 30 to 40. That's just, but I have nothing to base that off of other than my own feeling. But speaking of feelings, over 2 years later, you and I know almost the exact same stuff about the case.
Mm-hmm.
After the last press conference, some people changed their opinions on what's going on with the investigation. Do you think, do you feel, what is your confidence level on this case getting solved? Or as some have come out recently and said, I have no faith now, and I feel like they may never get this guy.
Well, what I'm hoping is, I saw this thing where they should make t-shirts and sell these for Delphi to raise money, but they always say today is the day. And they say that every day.
Yeah, let today be the day.
Right.
Or today's the day.
And the idea is that, yeah, they've been wrong quite a bit, but one day that's going to be right. And, you know, it's, I think it's, you feel bad for them. And we've met them and we got to talk to them and look them in the eye and it becomes more real. And I can't even imagine
when you say them, do you want to be more specific?
Well, the family members. And so I hope so, but what I hope is that there's enough hope from the family and the community that somehow it just lets the universe work its magic and this screws up something and out of nowhere. You know, it's kind of like the Golden State Killer type thing. It's like somehow the universe was like, okay, now we can connect DNA to family members and boom, this guy that seemed to be somebody that we'd never catch, we got him. And I hope that, you know, people can... I know that seems a little hocus pocus to some people, but I think if you have enough people thinking that this is going to get solved, that
well, we all hope that it gets solved. I think the real question is: do either of us feel that it will? What's our confidence level that it will? How soon do you put a timestamp on that thing? You know, there's really only one person that hopes that it doesn't get solved, and that's the guy that we're calling Bridge Guy. Now, I feel I've not lost my confidence level in this investigation. I've not lost my confidence level even after a different sketch, a very much different sketch came out.
Mm-hmm.
What I wouldn't mind seeing, Captain, if they could apply it for us, we have a sketch of what appears to be a younger man, That being the second sketch, I would love to see that second sketch, that same image, that same person that I'm seeing in that second sketch, maybe with a hood on, a hat on, a hoodie on, some dress that appears to be more like the first sketch. Because what we're seeing on the bridge there is a guy wearing a jacket and possibly a hat or possibly a hoodie. I would like to see something like that. We did take a little criticism of not playing the audio of guys down the hill. A few people had suggested we probably should have included that in the last episode. IN, short for Indiana, IN.gov. If you type that in and look it up, you get the sketch, the most recent sketch, you get the image of Bridge Guy, you get several different pieces of audio there, all on the front page. You get the video, and it also includes that website address for the Abby and Libby tip at CACOSHRF.com, as well as some phone numbers there. But keep in mind, the sheriff have stated that their preferred method of receiving any tips would be email form. That way it's easier for them to categorize these things, catalog them, keep track of everything, keep track of the proper information. That would be the most helpful way. I still feel like, Captain, maybe this thing could be solved. I have a high level of confidence in that. I also have a high confidence level that it might be very soon, that it could be within the next year and a half. I think we just have to be patient with law enforcement with this and trust them. I think they are handling it very well. And I think that as long as the public continues to help, that this thing will get solved. And when they do finally make that arrest, that news is going to be big. That's going to be big. And it's interesting that you reference the Golden State Killer, or Ears, or Ons, or the original Night Stalker, all the different names that horrible monster had, because of his reign of terror lasted so long and he had so many victims. But it was believed in that case that we had audio, we had his voice, that we may have had his picture. And just the evidence that was involved in that was almost as such that people were going, how could this not be solved? How could this not be solved? And here we are sitting here with Libby and Abby's case. Same thing. We got the picture. We got the audio. We got a short video. It just takes that one person. And I know that sounds, I know people are probably tired of hearing that, but that's what it is. That's the state of the case right now. I believe they got the DNA. I believe they're just waiting on checking it against the right person. And I also believe in this case too, Captain, this is something we won't have to get too far into, but we also agreed off the record that there's a chance that when they do make the arrest, that the public might not be such aware of it right away, that there might be some things that they need to do, want to do behind the scenes before that information gets presented to us.
Yeah, to be clear about this, our idea was that it's possible that they have somebody that they've already arrested for another crime, and maybe they've done some testing or eventually will do some testing. But even if there's a match with the DNA, they might not actually make an announcement. They might spend another 4 weeks to maybe even 8 weeks. I mean, it's gone 2 years. The key is not making the arrest, like law enforcement has said. The key is not to make the arrest. The key is to make the arrest and to get a conviction.
Right. And if you have somebody that is on lockup right now with no real chance of getting out anytime soon, you have time to work on the individual. If there's reason to believe, and we won't get into it too far, but there's plenty of reason to believe that even if they do have DNA and have a match there, that they would not mind having a confession on top of that or further evidence. And on behalf of myself and the captain, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for telling a friend. Thank you to this week's sponsors. Join us back here in the garage next week. Until then, please be good, be kind, and don't litter.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.